The sound can only be described as otherworldly. But the source is as commonplace as the ground we walk on, the air we breathe, through sensitive electronic devices which translate fluctuations of energy. What are they saying? To whom or what are they talking? And how can we communicate with them?
Hello once again to the IMMP, the Intermillennium Media Project podcast. My name is Matthew Porter.
And I'm Ian Porter.
I'm his dad, he's my son, and I make him watch television. Specifically old television from back in the 20th century.
Why does this one feel older?
It does
somehow.
It does somehow, doesn't it? It's not just the iffy videotape transfer on these DVDs.
Yeah, this feels like something that is generated by the forces of the airwaves and less by a production team sometimes.
In search of the gods of television.
Exactly. And because that's the show we're talking about. And that's the thing, it's one of those shows that uses its title as a format for the title of episodes. It's In Search Of... dot dot dot.
It's yes.
The title of the show.
The series title has that ellipsis, and they just fill in every episode.
They just fill in, and this is like pure sci-fi and History Channel. This is pure... Like, this feels like something I find on modern YouTube to some extent as well, because it's these weird little tangents into specific content.
Yes, it's little bite-sized bits of paranormal weirdness.
Yes.
And I've talked before about the influence of various sources of paranormal weirdness.
The
strange collection in the children's section of the library.
I half expected you to say the strange collection of children.
Oh, that too.
That just describes your friends as a kid.
It does. But so you can imagine how I felt when this came on the air in 1977. Absolutely, because it wasn't just a show about UFOs. It wasn't just a show about ghosts. It was a show about everything weird I could possibly imagine. And a new one every single week. This was a weekly syndicated show, so every week there was another episode. Where I lived, it was on one of the network affiliates, and it was in that time slot, that 7:30 time slot. So it was after the network nightly news, and before the core of prime time family hour started at 8 o'clock. So this was What?
That's when this aired?
This aired at 7:30 p.m. I forget which day of the week it was, but every week. At 7:30 p.m. on a network affiliate that was syndicated.
No, like, this is like late at night or weirdly early in the morning stuff. We are recording this, and I've just had breakfast, and I felt like I rewatched an episode while eating some Cinnamon Toast Crunch knockoff. And I like, this feels right. I'm supposed to be here with a bowl of sugary cereal, watching some very, very charismatic presenter guy tell me all about why bees are going to kill us all. And that's where this fits. You're telling me this was like just before prime time? What in the world?
It no. was. Yeah. For me, this was, you know, we've just had dinner, so we're happy. And dad has just finished watching the news. So he's reading the newspaper and we get to turn on something else. And of course, it's In Search Of.
Oh, that is wild. No.
Yeah. And this went for 7 or 6 seasons. 24 episodes each. There was a lot of this.
Yeah. This is a long thing. And it's got a lot of odd history because it's been shown all over the place with new segments added. It's been redone. It's been rebooted.
Yes.
Before. So. But apparently a lot of people really do still love this original and its host and just the way it presented itself.
And what they did in some other countries was they re-recorded the host segments. So they had someone who was familiar to the Australian audience, for example. It's
yeah.
used as an Australian presenter to re-record all the narration. But I remember the original version hosted by somebody who had, partly because of this, an inordinate influence on my life, Leonard Nimoy. And he has this great voice that's, it sounds trustworthy yet inquisitive, and it's, he's got a great voice for this and a great presence for this.
Oh, yeah. And so every episode starts with him talking about, kind of introducing you to the topic, and he'll be in the middle of saying his things. And then they'll just drop cut the opening onto him, and you're suddenly lost. And then you're coming back, and he continues to talk, and like they're nervous he's going to keep going, they drop the fact that the producers are explaining this will have conjecture and scientific information in there.
This series presents information based in part on theory and conjecture. The producer's purpose is to suggest some possible explanations, but not necessarily the only ones, to the mysteries we will examine.
And the title card becomes this panicky best friend getting in there before his buddy Leonard here keeps going off the deep end.
Like, it's okay. Okay, I'm going to let you finish, Leonard, but I just have to let people know.
Absolutely. I didn't expect a Five Nights at Freddy's jump scare of a title sequence. It's, you know, can this really be true? Da, 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 da. It's like, oh, goodness.
And that music has such power.
It does.
There is some surprisingly good music throughout. It's all, you know, 70s synth.
Yeah.
It sounds like something they could have pulled out of a music library somewhere. And yet it's so, for me at least, so associated with this show. Not only that title, but also some of the other music they use in the background as they're discussing their strange topic.
Mm-hmm. And there's something about the way Leonard Nimoy is presenting stuff here. The guy has a gravitas and a sure-footedness there, as you were describing. He says things with such confidence. But there's really three kinds of episodes, which are established science, absolutely weird paranormal, and I almost want to call it stretch for time, where they don't have enough content and they go in wild directions.
Yes, and that's how this veers a lot. Sometimes they just do not have 22 minutes worth of content and they stretch it.
Yeah.
Sometimes they pick a topic and the title of the episode is so broad, and yet they focus in on some weirdly specific example in order to get it into 22 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And this is kind of Leonard Nimoy getting to do I just want to call it a podcast in some ways, because there's this weird mix of strange conspiracy theory and true crime. The way he would go into certain topics, like to get an idea, we watched a variety of episodes together, but I also watched a couple of episodes on my own, and his Amelia Earhart episode felt like a true crime podcast.
That is interesting. Maybe podcasts are the modern successor to In Search Of.
Yeah. YouTube has some of that in terms of the editing style and the being able to splice together mini documentary things if you can cite your sources properly and everything else. But there is a lot of podcast-y, I'm here to deliver you a new topic each episode in this theme bubble. That sort of formatting fits very well.
And something else they do in that opening over that terrific music is they sort of give you a list of the kinds of topics this show is intended to cover. And it is a broad list, from aliens to ancient civilizations, to magic and witchcraft, to missing persons, to myths and monsters. And they also have the catch-all unexplained phenomenon.
And it's all very well presented, but especially with the bad transfer quality of any modern copies you can find and such, it has this welcome to my TED talk, you live here now, kind of feeling, because it's all of, every time a new thing comes up, there's another picture added to the weird things collage that the opening title is. And it's like they're like, tiny cropping stuff to fit it around the text in perfect ways.
You know that game they sometimes play on Whose Line Is It Anyway? Where someone has to be giving a talk and they don't know what's on the screen behind them?
Yes!
I want to see that done with the opening images from In Search Of.
Oh, yes! I love that. I mean, the first episode they throw you into is just a wild trip as just to... Like, the idea that that's episode one is, can plants talk?
Right.
And that's just like, if you want a tone set, this is one of those shows where it's like, watch episode one, you'll know if you want it. Go from there.
And that's episode one of the series, but it should be acknowledged that the series actually grew out of a collection of TV specials that happened beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
In that there was In Search of Ancient Astronauts, which was a Von Däniken kind of, well, ancient alien sort of thing. And
yeah,
then there was, you know, In Search of Ancient Mysteries, The Outer Space Connection, which was kind of a ancient aliens panspermia sort of question that they were asking. And these were narrated by Rod Serling. And
which fits the style. There's something of that.
And if you can't get Rod Serling, I can see why they decided, oh yeah, Leonard Nimoy. He's not busy right now.
I mean, what was he doing at the time? He's from...
There's another show that we'll talk about at some point.
Yeah, exactly. He's from that other show.
But in 77, they decided, well, there's enough out there. People are interested in this stuff. Let's make a TV series. And you're right. Of all things, they start with, can plants talk?
Okay. It's like, you know, we're going to start it like the bell rings and they throw a left hook in terms of show topic.
And it's a great example of how certain kinds of paranormal topics were treated and who was interested in them in the 70s, in that there was the, we want to extend what science is willing to look at. But there was also a whole lot of hippie interest and ideas. And I think a lot of the scientists we see in the episodes like Can Plants Talk? Other Voices, it was called, are, you know, aging hippies who went back to school and studied botany or neurology.
Yes, absolutely. And I will say, even during its weirdest things, I got a very Magic School Bus vibe from this, where the level of eagerness that Leonard Nimoy's presenter had, and just the way it was written, where there was this flow from thing to thing,
yeah,
kept that, like, it always explained. But if I step back a little, I can also see where there's wild logic jumps in things, that kind of hippie attitude things, where certain phrases get used to mean two things and then make them equivalent. I'm thinking in Stonehenge, where electromagnetism and telepathy start being reused interchangeably by the, like, 15-minute mark rapidly.
And that,
like, this is flipping back and forth very fast.
And this, I think, the show falls into that more and more as time goes on. And we've only watched episodes from the first season of this. I have a feeling
all of this is season one. My goodness.
This is going to be material for a We Kept Watching episode of the podcast in the future.
Oh, but yeah,
they get kind of fast and loose with their paranormal terminology. Also, the rest of their science, sometimes frustratingly.
Mm-hmm.
I think this might have been Stonehenge as well. They were talking about the time period around when it's estimated to have been built, which was like 2500 BC.
Yeah.
And saying how, and when most of humanity was living in caves, like, in 2500? No, they weren't. When no explorers had yet set foot on North America, except for the many, 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 many people who were living there before Europeans showed up. And even, and granted, in a lot of these sciences, 1977 is a long time ago, and new developments. But even in 1977, I think it was pretty well understood that North America had been populated well before 2500 BC.
Yeah, this has some very unfortunate Eurocentric viewpoints to its science and its history.
Yeah.
It's more willing to throw some wild speculation onto things more distant from Europe and jump faster. but it will spend a long, long time trying to tell you how dedicated people were to finding information about Loch Ness Monster.
Yes.
And it's like that right there. It tilts its hand as being from a time perspective that has a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
But it also is, if you're looking at this as fun and not education, which is really what it should be.
Yes.
If this sparks interest, this sort of series lives better nowadays when Google and the internet in general make following up and getting good information easier. I could see this being the sort of thing to send young Matthew heading back to the Library of Weirdness and finding a new book on a new topic if it caught his eye just right.
Yeah.
But it's even easier now to just find and look something up. And it's easier to find the newer information about this because plenty of the right. things they talk about either got disproven or morphed into some other exploration, especially of the scientific.
Yeah.
Since this show's being aired.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've got, if the first release was April 17th of 1977, so we are coming up on 50 years.
Right.
And like, that's, you know, half a century of scientific research since this makes this a starting point, not a comprehensive summary.
Yeah.
Even of the weird stuff.
And therefore, I think this had kind of a twofold impact on me. One was it brought even more of these weird topics into my sphere and my knowledge near it. Some of them were, they sparked an interest where I then went to see if I could find any books or other things to read about more about these. But it also, being from that kind of von Däniken Chariots of the Gods kind of point of view, it was very quick to accept that. Well, Europeans of that time wouldn't have been able to do this, so it must have been aliens. And I think that definitely took a while for me to get over and for me to learn. I mean, learning here, watching this stuff when I was 12, it was a while before I realized that's kind of a limited view. And that is not an explanation it makes sense to jump to. It's interesting to think about, and that's part of the fun, is just, wow, what if? But to jump to that conclusion is one that it's too easy to get into that habit, and this probably helped get me into that habit for a few years when I was, you know, around that age. But part of the fun today of watching these again almost 50 years later is to watch them and say, really, Leonard?
Really?
That what people really thought at Leonard? The time? Is that the best you could come up with, even in 1977? I think that not most of the humanity was living in caves in 2500 BC.
Yeah, or for me, where I enjoy this kind of content myself, maybe because I was raised by a dad who enjoyed this kind of content when he was a kid, I gravitate towards similar in that sense. I knew of some of the stuff in episode 9 about Martians and about the guy who thought he saw canals in Mars.
Yes.
And I don't think they ever actually gave the found explanation for why he saw those, which is... like, that's something that was known by that man's, the end of that man's lifetime. Everyone had figured out why he saw what he saw in his telescope. But they just kind of glance over this. It's like, there's not even a sentence here about scratches in his telescope lens. We're just going to keep going.
Because at the time, like, newspapers and magazines, if you give them a story about canals on Mars, they're going to run with that. The newspapers are not going to be as interested in the people tapping him on the shoulders. Hey, Percy, I think I got another explanation here you might want to consider.
Absolutely. But the fact that Leonard doesn't even say anything in this also kind of tells you, if you know some of the topic, you'll see the gaps where they skip things for the sake of narrative instead of presentation. And that's part of what you should be aware of with this show.
And yet that Mars, that In Search of Martians episode, was an interesting one because, unlike some of them, it was really a survey of scientific understanding with these interesting caveats and omissions. But it was about the fascination that Mars has held. And a lot of it was framed around the Viking missions. And Viking 1 had landed just a little under a year earlier. And it was a more science-oriented, or at least technology-oriented episode of In Search Of than most of them are. In some ways, the Loch Ness Monster episode was similar in that it gave you about what people had said and believed, and then it talked about some of the scientific work being done to try to confirm whether there is something in there.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like wide net, as we kind of described before. They'll give a topic that seems so broad, and they'll cast this wide net and then try to pick up bits of all of it and yeah. kind of give you that overview. But it also results in issues of skipping over information and being vague and misconnecting stuff.
Yeah. One of the weirdly broad ones was the, and this is, I think, an extra that I watched, the In Search of UFOs. Now that is a big topic. That's a whole lot to cover in 22 minutes. And, you know, we've yeah. talked about the Project UFO TV series that just went through the Project Blue Book files. The In Search of UFOs, they picked one particular story, not the most famous or interesting necessarily, and interviewed this family and reported on the polygraph tests that people had taken. And it was weirdly specific to put under the title In Search of UFOs, as opposed to In Search of whatever the heck these four people happen to see.
In Search of that UFO in particular.
Yes.
Dude, where's my UFO?
One of the ones that I remembered most from when I was a kid was the Bermuda Triangle episode.
That one's interesting.
Because that
will
was,
say.
That is one that seems to me, even watching it again, seems very rich because they have so much information to pull from. They've got the all the stories of thing of ships and then planes disappearing in the area. They've got lots of possible scientific explanations that they talk about. They've got some weird paranormal explanations, including that really creepy phone call that a Florida radio station got. And I remember hearing that on another TV special at some point. That
call was so bizarre.
Wasn't it? About this energy vortex spot on the Earth. And that was a topic of discussion among me and my friends in school for a few days after that. Like,
oh, goodness.
We just took for granted that this person with the creepy voice calling the Florida radio show knew something. Otherwise, why would he have a creepy voice and be calling a Florida radio show? So we were trying to figure out. Just
inevitably makes your voice creepier.
Exactly. No one would both lie and talk like that.
That's how people know I know nothing. I sound friendly. But yeah, that's a good example episode where it's like, we're going to dive way deeper here. Yeah. But we're going to give you kind of this variety of things, but we're going to pull from this is a path where ships go and things disappear. And we start out kind of, I think didn't that one start kind of focusing on a single ship leaving and it has to go through this section?
Yes. Yeah.
And there's a lot of good narrative work in that sense where like the way it gets presented is set with this tone and this format.
And those are some of the best ones where they start with something very specific. So they have a story to tell and there are stakes and you're wondering what's going to happen to the people on this ship. And then they broaden it to talk about the topic in general. They do a bit of that in the Loch Ness Monster episode because they talk about specific sightings and they've got, in some cases, it's someone recounting a specific sighting that was recounted 100 years earlier.
Yeah,
but at
you're
least
getting
they,
a bit of a game of telephone.
Yeah, at least they give you a story instead of just narration about the topic. Those are some of my favorite ones.
I agree.
And one of the things that I like so much is just how you never know what weird turns they're going to take in this. They'll start with something that seems, well, that seems plausible. And then suddenly, or maybe this other thing that is absolutely unhinged. So like the Ancient Aviators episode.
Okay.
Which was, focused on the Nazca Plains in Peru and the images that
yes.
really can only
oh,
make
that.
Sense from,
yeah,
from a great altitude.
Yeah, can man fly?
So they have these speculations about, did people of this time have some kind of aviation capability? Had they invented balloons or something, for example? Or were there visitors from another planet? Or is it shamanic out-of-body experiences that allowed people to astral project into higher altitudes so they could see these with their mind's eye? It's like, let's back up a little bit. Leonard, there are still some other things we can talk about before we jump to ancient aliens and OBEs.
I would love to get, and I doubt this exists still, this is something that was tossed out in the production facility after it was done. I want to see the shooting, the recording script for Leonard's voiceovers, because I want to know how much was scripted and if there is a correlation between crazy tangent and how late in the recording session it was. Because I get the feeling that Leonard is there like recording over this thing, and there's this bit of extra energy building up as he's just like,
That's a good point. He was probably shooting a number of these on a given day.
Yes.
It's like some of those game shows from the 70s where, you know, the Thursday and Friday, everybody's a little more giggly because they've been out to lunch and had a few drinks.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm wondering if we've got an example of that where he's like, maybe it's aliens. That's not in the script. Oh, don't stop him. This is going to be a good episode. Or maybe they're psychic or psychic aliens. It's like, oh, yeah, that's going to be a top rating.
That would be fun. I do know that these were pretty well scripted because Nimoy wrote one of the scripts himself.
Okay.
There was one particular topic he was interested in. We haven't watched this, at least not yet. But there was an episode about Vincent van Gogh.
Oh.
And he had a particular interest because he had played Vincent's brother Theo in a one-man show. I think it was a one-man show on stage. So he had kind of delved into this topic of Van Gogh. And so he wrote an In Search of it. I don't know what they were in search of. I don't remember the episode. But at least he wasn't just showing up to read the scripts and get the paycheck. He had some interest in this show, at least enough that's that good. He wanted to contribute to it in other ways.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes they took an episode that, like, what are we really searching for? Like, there was one about earthquakes.
Yeah.
It's like In Search of Earthquakes. Found one. There are several around the world every year. You can relax. Don't have to search for them anymore.
And yet, I think that one is a good one to show as an example, because it was talking about how new some of the concepts of the plate tectonic work they were doing was. And for me, I watched this and it really established for me that this was a late 70s production. Because by the time I was in school in the late 90s, the stuff he was talking about as new was a 20 years established scientific fact in my textbooks.
Right.
And that tells me this kind of cutting edge, how much was searched of what, where things were tech-wise in general, and how things were being approached. The discussion was very, it helped center all the rest of the series for me, because earthquakes had that element of cutting edge at the time, and that let me set and tone everything else based on that for my own interaction.
And that's an episode that makes your comparison to things like the Magic School Bus make so much sense to me, because it really was about the science, and they were, I don't want to say sneaking in, but they were really providing some interesting, accessible science education as part of it. It was really, it was in search of new seismic science. And
that's where I can, I was happy with certain episodes, because even if the topic was crazy, they'd showed some amount of scientific method and rigor about saying, you know, here's a hypothesis, there's a method to test. There's a little bit of that in the Loch Ness Monster episode, where it's like, we think there's a thing here, here's the sightings information, here's all the ways we're testing it tech-wise.
Right, and here's National Geographic and these other scientific organizations and what they are doing to try to answer. I think that was one of the hooks that they, reason why they did that Loch Ness episode when they did, was there was a lot of both because of new technology and because of popular interest, there were a lot of scientific investigations going on. And even in the Ken Plants talk, they were at least going in and checking some of the, like, using polygraphs and using electromagnetic field detectors and, you know, Curly in photography, which there's a lot of questions around that, but at least it's some, there people are trying to figure out some ways to test things. It's not just we have spooky feelings, and here's why.
Yeah, there was this, there was talk about the fact that like plants and all living things have electromagnetism in there. It's like, right. Okay, that's some interesting discussion.
Yeah, and there's always a jump to, oh, and that means we can communicate them with them in these ways. Like, well, we've got a few steps we need to prove between here and there, but interesting thinking. And similarly, when they really focused on the science things like the earthquakes, they tended to throw things in like, some say pets can predict earthquakes, and here's why we think that is. Interesting questions, but at least they gave a little bit of a feel of the paranormal weirdness.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of the don't make me tap the sign, and it's electromagnetism isn't psychic powers. Just written in bold sans serif font on a metal plate. I'm like, we might need that for this series, but at least they've got a lot of it. They got a lot of, you know, a lot of spirit about the whole thing. Not that kind of spirit.
Then their monster episodes, it went beyond cryptids when they talked about monsters or things that we can associate with monsters. That we watched an episode about the mummy's curse and about the early 20th century Egyptology and digging up Tutankhamun and such. And then what happened to the people who had been involved in that? Is this because of the mummy's curse that some people had reported? No real conclusions, but they laid out this interesting set of facts and interesting course of events in a way that made it a fun narrative. It was almost a spooky ghost story with the edge of science added to it.
Mm-hmm. And having the interviews with the great grandson, I think, of the guy who died.
Yes.
It's like, that's fascinating. They do pull in a variety of people who know something about the topic. This does not always mean they're going to be good on camera or coherent, but they know something.
Right. They do. They are interested in bringing in expert voices, partly because it makes it interesting for television. This is for different definitions of expert voice, depending on your topic and who they could get.
Yeah.
But at least they do try to bring in additional opinions and people who at least claim to have some evidence to show us, and they show that to us. The show, the series tends to be rather credulous about whatever evidence is shown to them, but that's television.
Yay.
And there was another episode, just thinking in terms of monsters, there's an episode about Dracula, which is really just laying out the history of Vlad the Impaler and the legends and the stories of Dracula, starting with Bram Stoker. And to what extent do these overlap, and in what ways did Bram Stoker's character pull from history, and in what ways is it purely invented? And of course, they had to throw in questions. Was Vlad really a vampire? Well, I have my doubts, but at least it's an interesting question.
Once again, it's like, there's just enough history in science to not get mad when they go on weird tangents, but they do go on the tangents.
Probably the highest on my list for the why did you make this question was actually the second episode when they went into it's called In Search of Strange Visitors, but it is about New Hampshire's Mystery Hill and the Oracle Chamber. And essentially it's the ruins of a structure. And it was another one of these, well, we don't know how people who lived here at the time could have built it. Isn't that spooky? And people speculating that it was ancient Phoenicians who had come to New Hampshire and built this thing. And it's like, they just had so little substance to talk about. They had interesting footage of somebody wandering around these ruins, but there wasn't a whole lot of story there. So, and this is only episode 2. If they had gone into this in season 5, I could see, you're starting to run low. You got to pull a few of these out each season. But really, you're out of the gate with episode 2 about this. Well,
I kind of expected to see like a paid for by the New Hampshire Tourism Board splash page or something.
Vacation like the ancient Phoenicians did. Come to New Hampshire.
Now the Phoenicians can get down to business.
So you said that you watched the Amelia Earhart episode, which I have not rewatched.
Yes.
What did you think of
Amelia? That one was interesting, but it starts out strong and spirals off from there.
Are aliens or monsters involved?
No.
Okay.
It's a lot more, Amelia Earhart was great. Here's a bit of her life history. And then the second half is all, well, did she crash? She's probably too good of a pilot to just crash unless something went really wrong. Was she a spy? Did she land somewhere? Maybe she was doing a spy mission against the Japanese. Here's 17 times that people have thought they saw Amelia Earhart somewhere in Japan.
Ah.
Because she was apparently captured as a spy. I'm not letting this go. And to make me look not as crazy, here's a side tangent about a guy who thinks he found Amelia Earhart, and the lady he thinks is Amelia Earhart is very mad and making press releases and filing restraining orders to get this guy to stop.
Oh, yeah, that takes a weird turn.
Takes a weird turn. And that's where I'm like,
Wow.
So, especially since now we've actually had Amelia Earhart, like, more wreckage and stuff found.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's there's a pretty strong evidence that her craft has been found. Yeah,
exactly. A lot of this speculation and such was made pointless, mm-hmm. but it's fascinating to see what the thoughts were at the time. And I just was not expecting it to become so unpleasant at times about this one guy. Like, I saw her, I met her, I knew who this lady was, and then it's her at a press conference, like, I'm not, please leave me alone.
In search of deranged stalkers. We found one.
We found one. But there was also historical footage of her and everything else, of Amelia Earhart, and it was very well put together for that first half, and very fascinating because it had so much more of a concrete core than some of the other ones. It had a narrower specific focus, and it showed how well they were able to gather information, put together a cohesive frame. It showed the narrative skill
mm-hmm.
that this team had, and that same narrative skill is used on everything else. The fact that everything else is broader or the information becomes more vague means it's leaning on that narrative heavier, actually.
And that was definitely a kind of episode structure they used repeatedly, where they loaded up with a lot of historical summary. And I think when I first started watching this show, when I was 11 years old, I considered that padding, and it was not the interesting stuff, get to the aliens and ghosts and stuff. But mm-hmm. as the show went on and I got a little bit older, I started appreciating those a little bit more, because they were these neat little capsule summaries of a particular historical topic that, the limitations of what they chose to put notwithstanding, I felt like I understood a little bit more just from having watched this 20-minute TV show, be it Amelia Earhart or some historical figure that they were in search of, or in search of something he or she had done. Those historical summary episodes turned out to be some of my favorites in the long run.
They're a good example of that. If this sparks your interest, go, and you'll at least know enough to know what to search now.
Right.
You won't be going in blind to the same topic.
I do have to say, though, that the last episode of season one was a disappointment to me.
The Stonehenge?
That was about Stonehenge.
Yeah. Stonehenge.
And that was one where,
yeah. A lot of questions, a lot of, why did they dig this up from over there? Never, ever talk more.
Right. It's harder to take it seriously now because so much of its archaeological and other information has been superseded, but some of what they put into that episode was just bad information, even for the time.
Yeah.
And so much of it was the, you know, it's amazing astronomical alignments, given the fact that these were built by primitive barbarians. Well, maybe they weren't quite as primitive and barbaric as you assume they were.
Yeah, and there's a whole lot of modern druids. Stop it with the modern druids.
Yes.
And the electromagnetic spots with the modern druids. Are the druids magnetic? Is that why you keep going back to them? Please.
Oh, okay. Now I want little models of druids. Like the little Scotty dogs that you can make dance and move around. Yes. Things. I want druids that you can do. Magnetic druids. Yes. Hey, you're our merch guy. Get on that.
I can print us little druids with magnetic bases for
that
sure.
That would be great. Here's the druids in their ritual dance.
They're magnetic. Exactly. Oh, we could have some fun with that.
But yeah, they have the, well, we don't really have a connection to ancient druids, so we're going to show you minute after minute of these so-called modern druids doing things around Stonehenge. And
I did appreciate the fact that they showed, like, the guy who's maintaining the park getting mad at these people who keep showing up, which was also very British.
And it's British supernatural stuff, so they have to bring in ley lines and have their various power sources. Power sites are connected. But it was just such a jumble, and when they had a coherent narrative, it wasn't a very good one. And that was a shame, because I was fascinated by Stonehenge at the time and didn't have a lot of information. This might have been one topic where my library didn't have a decent book for me to read. And I was unsatisfied by that episode when I was a kid, and I understand even more why that was, having rewatched it. And that's what whenever explanations for these large structures or ancient structures are discussed, I always come back to this point of, you know, do not underestimate the capabilities of a large group of people with a surplus of food and a charismatic leader.
Yeah.
They can build a lot of stuff and have for thousands of years.
They show up, make things happen.
Well,
I think we're coming towards our end, but
I think we are. It's almost time for final questions. So yeah, stay tuned for those.
Okay. In the meantime, Dad.
Well, if people want more of the Intermillennium Media Project, they can go to immproject.com, where you'll find all of our past episodes. You'll also find our shop if you would like to support the podcast and get the cool things like a coffee mugs and t-shirts. That's one. We're recording in the morning, but one of the downsides of recording remote is that I cannot share this coffee with you.
Ah, thank you. Yeah.
The Intermillennium Media Project is not sponsored by Press Coffee Roasters, but it could be, so Press, get in touch with us.
Yeah, please.
And also at immproject.com, you will find a link to our YouTube channel and to our Discord. We'd love to hear from you there. Our contact page, where you can email us or send us actual physical mail to our P.O. Box. And a link to our Patreon. If you want even more of the podcast, you'll find bonus episodes on Patreon, and your support on Patreon also helps keep this podcast going and helps me to continue tormenting Ian with strange old movies and television. And Ian, where can people find you?
I can be found as Item Crafting most places, be that Item Crafting Live on Twitch or itemcrafting.com.
And you can find me as bymatthewporter.com. You can also find me on YouTube as bymatthewporter, where you will find my movie and movie theater reviews in the Draft House Diary.
Yay.
So, in search of final questions.
Okay.
Screen or no screen?
I'm going to say screen in bits. I'm not sure. A lot of the information's off, and if it's not the sort of thing you're gravitating towards, it's not going to grab you at all. But it's fun if you're into this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And you've got to know going in that you're dealing with outdated and wrong plenty of times, but it can be great in the background. It's good laundry folding stuff.
I guess that's its best application now is as background material. I'm surprised to hear myself say that it's generally a not screen, because so much of the information is out of date, and there are so many better sources. If you're interested in this paranormal stuff, at the time it was, we would take anything we could get. This showing up on our TVs every week, it was a cannot miss television. But now, unless the nostalgia factor is really powerful and is really going to help you enjoy it, I can't recommend people spend their time with this or spend the effort to find it.
You know what? I'm actually going to switch over to join you, because I'm realizing part of why I enjoyed this right now is that it matches with things I enjoy online.
Yeah.
And I'm in between seasons of some of those. So this has been supplanted by things like Puppet History on Watcher. And things like that, to some extent, which do similar kinds of fun weirdness throughout time.
Mm-hmm.
I think, this might not be a screen then, but it's if you need an extra boost of the stuff that you already are enjoying, you can go hunt for this in search of though, because it can be a little hard to get a hand of.
Yes.
Hold of. Yeah.
And the next question then would be revive, reboot, or rest in peace, which is an interesting question for this series.
Interesting question. So this series, it ran for 8 seasons.
I thought it was six.
That's, yeah, no, it was that. Oh, that's the weird thing. Six seasons originally. It had an 8-episode revival in 2002.
Oh, yeah. Featuring Mitch Pileggi, huh?
Yeah. Who he's been in a variety of things that have a similar, you know, vibe. And he this was on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Right. He's best known for the X-Files, of course.
And then in 2018 to 2019, there was a revival starring Zachary Quinto.
Right. The guy from Heroes. On the History Show.
Yeah.
Interesting choice.
Interesting choice to put Zachary Quinto filling that role. I mean,
I haven't seen any of those, but I could see where they would work. I could see where he and Nimoy could kind of get the same tone.
Yeah, they could kind of fit the same role in that sense. But that also that app lasted for 10 episodes, and I will note that they apparently been switching it up because there was part one and part two episodes in his run, and it looks like they did two seasons of it, but there's barely any information about his season two.
Yeah.
So there's 18 episodes total of his, but I don't even know if 8 of those got released. And some of them did go over the same topics again. They were update versions. So they had a new Bermuda Triangle episode. They had a new The Loch Ness Monster episode.
I am suddenly interested. I'm going to have to watch some of those.
Yeah. So that proves something about this, that for this show to reboot or revive, either way, they're the same thing. And it's not a narrative that has a structure like this. This is I pale to call it an educational format show.
Right.
It's an entertainment history show, which means it doesn't have a narrative to go off of, but it does have the benefit of being able to repeat topics years later as new information and new things come out, as the connections in the presentation update with time. I don't think this is needed. I'm gonna say rest in peace, but that's just because for the same reason it could do the same things over, there are dozens upon dozens doing the same things.
I guess I was gonna say reboot, and it's hard to tell what is a revival, what is a reboot here, because like you say, it's not a narrative. It's not like you're picking up some continuity. I would be tempted to say that anything that doesn't have the same host involved in some way is a reboot, not a revival. And we can't have a revival because, sadly, Leonard Nimoy is no longer with us. But if the Zachary Quinto version was specifically revisiting some of the earlier episodes, if they acknowledge the fact that this had been covered by the 70s version of In Search Of, I would consider that a revival. Either way, I would say reboot. I think there's always a place for brief, thoughtful, interesting investigations of these things. There's plenty of other 11-year-olds out there who may or may not have access to other things, but I'd like them to have a source of a wide variety of strange things to be interested in. So I'm going to say reboot.
I get you. I can get behind that.
So this was fun because this is one where I literally had not seen any of this since it was originally aired. So coming back to it was
revisiting was your fascinating, childhood in the latest ways.
Very nostalgic and also sobering in that, wow, I was really desperate because I would sit through anything, wouldn't I?
Oh, boy.
I would sit through 6 minutes of file footage of modern druids because there's nothing else like this for me to watch. So this was fun.
I'm just thinking of Nimoy and the Druids being a band name.
Oh, that's cool. That sounds like a very good post-punk band.
Oh, yes.
And
I will say, I just want more Leonard Nimoy from the Martians episode talking about space. He was good at that.
Yes. Well, I'm sure we'll encounter him some more in the future. And we've also got more seasons of In Search Of. So as I say, I think that we're going to have some We Kept Watching episodes of the podcast going forward.
Yeah, we could have some fun pulling some other ones, which definitely means if anyone out there in the listening audience knows of a specific episode or topic they want to send us a message of, we will put that on the possible We Kept Watching list to figure out from there.
Yes, go to the contact page at immproject.com and let us know what you think. And what you want us to be in search of.
Yay.
But for now, I think that is all for this episode. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with more tales of media from back in the 20th century.
And in the meantime, go find something new to watch.